Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio. Today I'm joined by Terrence Bennett. Terrence is a Navy veteran who is here to talk about his transition out of the Navy and into his career in the tech world. So welcome to the show, Terrence. I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the viewers and for the listeners who are maybe not familiar with you and your background, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent 4 years down in Annapolis, Maryland, before commissioning in the Navy. Spent 2 years on a destroyer out of Pearl Harbor, including about 6 months off the coast of Iraq doing security operations with the Iraqi Navy. I was actually out in Bahrain during the Arab Spring, which really motivated me to better understand geopolitics and everything else out there. And I ended up making a jump over to intelligence shortly thereafter. Was an intel officer for about 5 years, finishing up at NCIS, and then made the jump over to Google. And we'll chat a little bit more about that, but that's really kind of its own interesting kind of chapter. Spent 2 years in Google Cloud, then 2 years in on Google's red team doing cybersecurity work before I got getting the itch to go into the startup world. And so that's where I am now. I'm leading a small software company called Dream Factory.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm really interested in hearing all of this, the transition into tech and what you're doing now, because everybody's career path is different. And you know, when you get out of the military, a lot of times you think you got everything together and then curveballs get thrown your way and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be really interesting, I think, to hear more about that. But your time in the Navy is, to me, kind of interesting as well. Just talking about your time with NCIS when you talk about that, the show immediately comes to mind. I can't help but ask, how much of the show, if you even watch the show, is stuff that you're like, yeah, that never has ever happened, or this is stuff that like happens all the time. What is your experience like if you ever watch that show?
So, ironically, the only show I've ever seen of NCIS was on the watch floor as a joke in the middle of the night. One night we put the show on one of the big TVs to watch because like none of us had ever seen it. As with all TV, it's largely fabricated. I think the only accurate thing is probably the name. But joking aside, NCIS has a really interesting, and maybe this is the reason they picked it for the show. It sits at the sort of cross section of both counterintelligence, intelligence, and criminal investigations. And it's one of the only agencies that has this absurdly broad sort of mandate across all those different areas. And so, in the intel world, there's a bunch of kind of laws around like who can have access to what kind of information. And so the watch flow is really interesting because you have a civilian law enforcement specialist who can only look at that data. And you've got uniformed folks who are looking at the intel piece of it. So really interesting place to work. I imagine there's a good reason why they picked it over other places to show about, but the show itself is a little bit silly.
Yeah, I kind of imagined that was going to be the answer that you're going to give. But, for me, it's interesting, talking to someone who's been there and actually experienced it, is it anything along the same lines? But yeah, it's a Hollywood dramatization of, what goes on, I'm sure. It's not, like you said, outside of the name, it's probably nothing similar to that. So, we talked a little bit about your time in NCIS and Naval Intelligence. How did your time in the military shape you as a person and as a professional to kind of set the stage for your next career in technology?
It's an interesting question. Occasionally people ask me, like, oh, what's the military like? And I sort of joke it's this like esoteric question almost because it's such a defining part of like who I am and my life experience. It's hard to sort of unravel myself from that experience. But I think you know, as a young man, I was really driven by with a sense of purpose to serve. I didn't know exactly what that meant, and the military and the Navy specifically gave that to me, gave me that fulfillment. And I think for me, jumping straight into a leadership position in uniform was a really, really powerful, it was incredibly demanding a role to be in as a 21, 22-year-old, but it really defined me, and I think it sort of combining that with this sense of purpose to serve has given me real direction and drive in life. I spent 2 years on a ship first, so serving leadership in those roles, and then ultimately on the intel side as well.
Yeah, and I can imagine the not just the leadership side of things, but also the discipline and the rigor of your military life, and the things that you did on a day-to-day basis in the military helped you as you stepped into that civilian role, where a lot of times in civilian world the discipline is kind of lacking, I found, with some of the people who haven't served in the military, right? So did you see yourself kind of standing out from the crowd when it came to comparing yourself against your peers as you're getting into some of the roles that you were in, that as you're getting out of the military? And would you attribute that to your experience in the military?
Yeah, absolutely. I think discipline is part of it. I actually think, specifically as a SWO, as a surface warfare officer, I was plunged into this incredibly challenging environment where I didn't know a lot. I didn't, frankly, have that much training. And I was dealing with massive ambiguity around how do you get things done? Where's the line of like right and wrong with regard to some of the nuance of how you execute these roles? And I think, discipline is definitely part of it. I think I've always been kind of somebody who can self-motivate and get up when I need to get up and be there and do the job right. I think it was learning how to thrive in ambiguity in the military really set me up for success, specifically at Google, right? Where I was thrust into a role where I couldn't even spell the acronyms of some of the stuff, I was working on. I was dealing with people who were at the height of their career, all type A, all sort of incredibly talented folks, and trying to like take notes in a meeting where you understand a third of what's being said, and then being able to just pick it up quickly and learn how to execute and figure out what I can do, where I can't, what I need to ask help for, is really I think what maybe gave me an edge over some of my peers to get to within less than 2 years jumping from the role I came in at to jumping over the red team and then moving off from there.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that you said there that I think is definitely something that your military experience helped you with was figuring out those acronyms, because the military is full of them. And sure. I know sometimes I think in acronyms, like I abbreviate things in my mind, or if I'm hearing an acronym that I've never heard before, I try to figure it out, and just based on the context of whatever is going on, a lot of times I'm able to figure it out. But people who have never been around an environment where there's a lot of acronyms like that, they probably would struggle a little bit more, I would think. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way my mind is wired, and maybe that's not attributable to the military at all. But to me, that seems like it would be something that would definitely be a benefit of just being able to figure out acronyms.
Oh, 100%. It's essentially decoding a language, right? And different areas of tech have their own kind of languages. You move from cloud databases to over to cybersecurity. And it's just like going from Army to Navy, right? Like the same acronyms mean something totally different, right?
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, absolutely. And when you deal with even different languages that you're talking about in the tech world, it could be programming languages or different things like that. Yeah, you could be talking two different things. Just like you said, same thing with Army and Navy and other branches, you might be dealing with things totally differently. So let's talk about your transition. Walk us through the transition out of the military and into the tech world, and what inspired you to go into the tech world versus other career that might have been an option for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always been interested in technology. I built my own computer in high school, and And as I was looking to get out, I really put out feelers across tons of industries. And I found an amazing site business called Veterati, V-E-T-E-R-A-T-I. And what they are is essentially a networking platform where a veteran or active duty can connect with all these different folks across different industries and just kind of ask them really open-ended questions like, you know, what's your day like? And what do you love about the role? And what do you hate? And I quickly kind of made this mental list of careers, just kind of crossing them off. And I came back to what I thought I wanted to do, which was tech. And it was actually then podcasts largely, and audiobook to a certain degree, but podcasts where I really kind of immersed myself in everything I could find around the industry and different companies. And you know, there's all these wonderful founder stories and just stories about companies, right? I think podcasts were probably one of like the biggest educators for me to understand this world. Otherwise, you know, unless you know people in that world, which I didn't, you're not going to get access to. So I ended up learning about a Google resume workshop they were hosting in DC. I was stationed in Quantico at the time. So I signed up and I went, I met with some incredible people, and someone there said, we ended up meeting a bunch and having lunch, and they were like, Terrence, I'm gonna help you figure out how to get into here. And the woman, MJ is her name, she was a former Foreign Service officer and had been stationed all over Southeast Asia and understood that the military, specifically intelligence type work and the experience, understood how that kind of related to the civilian workforce. So she put me in for a few roles. I immediately got rejected from all of them, even though I had this sort of coveted referral, right, from a Googler. But I got a call from a recruiter for administrative business partners, i.e. executive assistants. I'd done a year as an EA working for a senior officer. And so I had that on my resume. So the recruiter said, hey, this isn't what you applied for, but would you be interested in being an ABP, essentially EA? And that's kind of how it all started. And so I interviewed, they flew me out to Sunnyvale, and that's what I did for a little less than 2 years. I was an EA. I joke, I went from managing a global watch floor at NCIS to managing calendars. And it was incredibly humbling. But it was the perfect launching pad for me to kind of reset and ask all these sort of fundamental questions around, like, is this the kind of place I want to work? Are these the kinds of people I want to be around? You know, what is this whole thing and how does it operate, right? And ABPs or AEAs are kind of like this glue that holds organizations together, and they understand all the secret sauce of how things actually get done. Not to mention, you just build a really powerful network within the organization because you're dealing with VPs and their sort of number twos on a regular basis. So, it was a really, really great experience. It was really humbling because I was working side by side with a lot of like recent college grads. And it felt like all this time I spent in the military was all for naught. I think I might be getting some of your other questions, right? But it was like taking two steps back ultimately be able to take a few steps forward, right?
Right. And sometimes that's necessary in a career, is sometimes you have to just take those steps back and start from the ground up and rebuild yourself. It doesn't mean that the experiences that you had before, like your experiences in the military, were all for nothing. It's more just, you know, thinking about, you know, what is it that I want to do and what do I want to achieve? And with anything, you have to learn how to crawl before you can walk and before you can run. And so, you know, what you're doing or what you were doing in your first career, it was totally different from what you were doing in the military. So while those intangible type things, the leadership skills and that type of stuff was great, it's important things to have. It's important to have in any career that you have, but you have to kind of go back and take the basics of the career that you're going into and learn those things too. And being humble enough to know that that's okay, that's part of the whole system and that's how these things work, I think is an important thing to do too on your end, right?
Oh, 100%. And that's one of the biggest things I try and communicate with veterans who are getting out. I'll have like an intel officer, maybe similar background to me, reach out via LinkedIn and say like, hey, like I've got a similar background to you. Like, tell me what can I do to get to where you're at, right? And I'll say, go be an EA for 2 years, right? But joking aside, right, like it looks really, really nice on paper, right? Like we all build out these LinkedIn profiles that are this this sort of like beautiful sort of painting of this incredible career. But that's not what it looked like or felt like for at the beginning, right? And it was actually, it was functionally a pay cut. I moved to one of the most expensive zip codes in the country to do work that was, you know, pretty basic in many ways, not very intellectually stimulating in many ways.
Right.
Now it's Google. So, you know, I actually taught myself some basic Google apps script, which is essentially JavaScript, and started automating work and doing all sorts of kind of fun stuff on the side, getting involved with, you know, all the extracurriculars that are involved at Google, and I made the most of it without a doubt. But and that was ultimately, you know, why my manager pulled me aside and was like, Terrence, like, we gotta let's find something next for you, whatever's next for you, right?
Right.
But yeah, it was a really challenging role, and it was humbling, and it did make me question a lot of things about, you know, my transition and but ultimately, obviously, you know, it worked out pretty well. But I think there's this myth that, you know, the civilian world is going to roll up this red carpet and you're going to get a better paying job with easier hours. And it's just, it's all going to be like a gravy train. And I would tell everyone, assume the opposite. Assume the beginning is going to be less pay and more right. work. And it's going to be really frustrating as you try and navigate this new ecosystem and culture and language and everything else.
Terrence, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced when you got out of the military and found yourself getting into that civilian career? Were there challenges as far as you talked a little bit about, you know, that initial rejection, but were there challenges with, you know, even just finding a job as quickly as you thought? You know, were finances an issue? What were some of the challenges that you faced?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when you get out, you do have sort of a few months to really kind of to prepare. And so I did try and spend a lot of time building out that quote unquote sort of network, right? And just trying to meet people and understand the different industries and my options. So I didn't struggle with unemployment in that regard. I struggled though with once I got established, you go through that sort of 6 month honeymoon, realizing that you know, asking this question of sort of why am I here? Like, why does any of this matter, right? When you have those questions in the service, it's really easy to sort of, you know, look at the flag on your sleeve and know why you're there. And the kind of stupid, kind of monotonous, seemingly silly stuff, you can sort of wash it away and say, well, it's just part of the process. It's government bureaucracy, whatever, right? Like, I'm here for this greater purpose. But when, like, the greater purpose is to sell software, you're like, why am I dealing with all this stupidity, right? Like, all this silly stuff, right? And so you do have to kind of check into yourself and ask, like, is this work that matters to me, that means something to me? And I think it's a struggle for everyone and anyone to kind of navigate that process. And I remember definitely having those questions. And I'm thankful that I was at a place like Google that has, like, a bigger than life kind of mission and purpose, right? Organize the world information. But I think that's really important to check in with yourself on a regular basis around and say, like, you know, do I actually like what I'm doing? And do I feel like it makes a difference and that it matters?
Yeah. And finding something that's meaningful. I know, like you were saying, in the military, there's a whole lot of meaning there. You're serving your country. You're giving back to a community, perhaps, and, you know, you're doing all this stuff, and there's a lot of purpose, a lot of meaning in the work that you do. But when you transition out, working for a company, you know, building software, or honestly, it doesn't matter what you're doing when you get out, it can be sometimes difficult to find that sense of meaning. I know myself, when I got back from Afghanistan, it was difficult for me to get back to work because I was like, this job isn't as meaningful as it once was to me. And so finding a sense of purpose, sense of, you know, some meaning in the work that you do is, sometimes it's difficult, but I think it's important to do as well. So, you know, what would you say, what kind of advice would you give to veterans who are getting out of the military and struggling to maybe find a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning, you know, maybe even if they're considering a career in tech or any career, really.
Yeah, for me, it was, I think, kind of easy because I, not easy, but, you know, I sort of have like this systems mindset, right? And I loved Intel and I loved like the systems side of it, understanding like how this big behemoth of like an intelligence kind of organization operates and how it all connects. And, you know, some of the biggest challenges in Intel are actually getting it all to sort of work and connect and properly, right? So for me, like drawing the line of between systems and software and making things work properly, or at least leading a team to make sure they're implemented properly, drawing that line to purpose and meaning and accomplishment is really quite easy. You know, when you had your question around like how would I recommend a veteran think about this, I would actually I'd borrow an analogy of this idea of the zone of genius. If the audience isn't familiar with it, they should check it out. And it's this idea of we all have passions, that things we're really passionate about, and then the things we're actually really, really good at. And if you sort of were to build that out to a grid, you've got four different sort of corners. And your zone of genius is the things that you're super passionate about and that you're also really good at. And if we're going to sort of add this like military transition lens to it, let's throw another zone on there of, and I think actually has meaning and value, right?
Right.
And that could be a really powerful framework as you sort of navigate this seemingly endless space of like opportunities and stuff that you could do, things you could do, whether it's your free time or whether it's, you know, professional work. You know, that's a lens to constantly use to look at what you're doing, and maybe it'll provide a little bit of clarity into, is this something I should really kind of pursue and double click on or not?
Right. And when you are talking about those things that you're good at, that you're passionate about, obviously there's, when you're talking about a job, there's a financial part to the equation as well. So you know, you have to find something that not only you're good at and that you are passionate about, but also something that can earn you a paycheck as well. You know, you can be you know, great at something, but if nobody's willing to pay for it, then that's a it's more of a hobby as opposed to a career. But if you can find that sweet spot where those things come together, that's just the most ideal situation. You end up having the best of both worlds. And I've heard this saying before: if you can find something that you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life, because it's just the, you know, your passion, and you don't feel like it's work. You don't have the Monday blues where you're dragging yourself out of bed like, oh man, it's Monday, I gotta go back and do this mind-numbing job all over again. But if you can find that thing that is giving you that sense of purpose, that you're passionate about, that you really enjoy, and that you're great at, I mean, it just energizes you. It gets you motivated, gets you moving, and really gets you fired up when you go to get into that work, right?
Oh, 100%. And you know, there's something to be said for having hobbies in life that are really fulfilling, even if your job isn't, right? We're all probably all going to have jobs that give us like a really deep, rich sense of purpose and belonging. But you can get close, right? It's all kind of shades of gray. Yeah. And you know, none of it's perfect, right? Like there's always things you wish you were better at, or things you wish you sort of, or sometimes you have to do things that you're not super passionate about. But I think it's about if you use that framework, it's a powerful way to get close to what's like an acceptable sort of level of passion and interest, right?
Right. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with having that hobby, that thing that, you know, I may have said, the way I said it before may have sounded like I'm kind of knocking it, but there's nothing wrong with having that as a thing that you're passionate about and that you just love doing, and you're really great at it. But, you know, maybe you're not making any money on it. So what? Like, money isn't everything. You do need to have that career, that job that is putting food on the table, keeping the roof over your head, and funding that hobby too. But it gives you that fulfillment. It gives you that piece of you that really energizes you and gets you motivated and gets you moving. So I think that is an important thing to have, whether it's in your career or it's just something else that you do on the side. You know, something that you do at nights or on the weekend or whenever you have free time. I think that's an important thing to have as well when you're looking at your just kind of overall the things that you do. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a part of your career, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, 100%. And we're actually sort of tiptoeing around another topic here, which is mental health in the veteran community. And I think these topics are all like very much interconnected, right? Right. I think a lot of veterans get out and they struggle to find something that gives them purpose and meaning. And with that, joy and maybe camaraderie and a feeling of sort of team ownership, right? And so I think it's critically important to just living a good life, to find the things that you're excited about, that you're good at, that you're passionate about, and as much as you can really kind of dive in and throw your heart into it, even if it maybe isn't what you get to do 9 to 5.
Right, and there's so many different things that people can do and that they're passionate about. Everyone has different interests, really it's just finding that thing that lights the fire inside of you, that gets you motivated, gets you going. And I think when people get out, they struggle with that because they think they need to be doing the high speed, kind of hua kind of things that you were doing in the military, but you like regular life isn't like that. You don't need to be going at 1,000 miles an hour, doing the things that you might have been doing in the military. And it's okay to kind of take a step back and slow down just a bit too,
Well, you have to, right? I mean, it's, if you don't, you'll end up just burned out and with a bunch of other issues, right? Yeah, no, 100% agree. It is interesting, right? I think that the military attracts a type A personality, especially like SF side, right? And teaching those folks to take a step back and to find like the simple, maybe calm, quiet things. Like, the things you can't be competitive at, you can't be number one at, you can't be the best at, right? Finding joy in that, I think is really challenging for a lot of people when you've spent your whole career and most of your adult life being kind of ranked against your peers and always finding purpose in that striving to be best, taking a step back and trying to figure out like how to enjoy not being the best at things is challenging.
That is a challenge because I know for myself, I'm competitive. Like even when I'm playing games with my kids, like, they're young, but I'm not letting them win. And when they do win, they've won legitimately. It's not like I'm just, going easy on them or being soft or anything. I'm actually trying to win, and I'm going after it as if I want to win. So yeah, it's a hard thing to do to kind of turn that off. But there are lots of things that you can do, not necessarily in a career, but just to get yourself doing something that makes you happy. It could be anything. It could be, painting a picture. It could be going for a walk outside. It could be gardening. It could be, who knows? It could be so many different things. But when you find the thing that just makes you happy, you're right. It has, pretty significant impact on mental health and, and what you, how you perceive yourself and the value that you're getting from just getting out of bed in the morning, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And for me, to kind of bring it back to tech, the opportunity to build is something that it's always been really motivating for me. And, I love this group with connected sets and Legos and all that stuff, right? And software is essentially like building just with, digital sort of components, right?
Right.
So I think a lot of veterans are attracted to tech for that reason. It definitely was a big appeal for me.
Well, and I know when I got into the tech world. So my background, I started off as an accountant. When I graduated college, I had an accounting degree, and I taught myself basic, HTML coding, because back then there wasn't the management systems like the WordPresses and things like that exist now, which made it so much easier. But I just enjoyed looking at a blank screen, typing a whole bunch of stuff in, and having something that I created from all of those pieces of information that I put together, the different code that I put in there. And it's the same thing as you start to develop other things, other softwares. I can imagine it'd be very similar to things like that. And to me, it was just very fulfilling to be able to create something from nothing, from scratch, basically, right?
Yeah, and the thing today, you put that site on AWS, or you build that app, or you build that game, you put it on AWS, they can scale to millions, in theory, billions of users.
Right.
That's what's incredible, is imagine like the Lego castle that can scale to the moon, in theory, right? That's kind of what software is. To me, like, it makes the little kid in me just giddy, you know?
Yeah, and I know a lot of times the people who are getting out of the military, one of the biggest things that they miss about being in the military is the sense of purpose that they had, the camaraderie that they had with the people that they served with. And it can oftentimes be very difficult to find that in the civilian life that they find themselves getting into. So for Terrence, how have you found ways to maintain that sense of purpose and connection to other people since leaving the military? And, do you have any advice for other people who are in a similar situation and how they might be able to find that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard, and it's something you have to seek out, right? When we all sort of got started boot camp, wherever else, you get thrown in with a group of folks and you're told make friends, become friends. You're just a lot of time together, right? Like, you don't really have a choice. And that's sort of the beauty of to a certain degree, the military experience, right? But you get plunked out into the civilian world, and there's no forcing function there, right? There's no forcing function to get up and do PT in the morning. There's no forcing function to get to know people and your neighbors. And a lot of people default to just sitting at home and doing their 9-to-5, and maybe they connect with some friends on the weekends, right? But not really building that community. And so it took me a while to see that and to figure that out, both actually the PT front and on the sort of building community side, right? I work with a nonprofit called Shields and Stripes, and they're working with veterans with PTSD to try and provide resources and a really powerful program to get them back on their feet. And working with that organization made me realize something really profound. Previous groups of veterans came home and struggled with the exact same thing. And organizations were created to solve those problems, the same way our generation is creating a lot of organizations to connect the veterans of our generation. But the VFW and the American Legion exist throughout the country, right? The American Legion has 3,000 posts nationally or something. I mean, every small town almost has one, right?
Right.
These organizations exist, and it turns out they're actually in your neighborhood, right? They're in your town. And you just have to go find them and seek them out. And I become really active with the VFW in town. And it's a bunch of, it's older guys, a lot of Vietnam vets. And they always tell me stories about when they first started coming, it was a bunch of old World War II vets, and they kind of sneered at them the guys are great. They're really friendly, but we're in this awkward sort of position, I think, a lot of veterans, because these organizations that have existed in our community for decades to serve this exact purpose don't really feel like a home, don't feel welcoming. And so I would challenge you to really, question that and make sure, is this actually an unwelcoming environment, or have you just not kind of put yourself in a little bit of an uncomfortable situation and actually gone out and met some of these guys and gals and get to know them? And the second thing is, there's tons of veteran organizations that are popping up. Everything from a Team Rubicon to I'm blanking on the name, but some really interesting fitness based ones. So I really encourage you to find out what's going on in the community and connect with folks. But this isn't boot camp. There's no drill instructor who's gonna put his boot in your backside and force you to go do these things, right? You have to a certain degree get self-motivated and get up and go seek these things out. And it's uncomfortable and it's difficult, and you're going to probably find a bunch of literally locked doors, right? But you got to shake it down and call the number and figure out where these people are meeting and organizing and find them.
Yeah. And you brought up a great point with organizations like the VFW and American Legion. You're right. They're all over the place. Then sometimes in certain towns, certain cities, there's more than one post in those locations. So you can definitely find groups of people to meet up with and who have a similar military background. So you can get that camaraderie again. And it may not be the guys and gals who you served with, the people who are your age. They may be that older generation, the Vietnam era and people along those lines, right? But think about it this way. If you're like, well, I don't want to hang out with a bunch of old dudes who are just, you know, sitting around the bar drinking or whatever, but they got a lot of knowledge. They've lived life. They've gone through this stage of transitioning out of the military or, you know, getting into a career, starting their families or, you know, whatever stage of life you're in. They've been there already. They're already on that older end of life. They've already been through all of that stuff. So whatever you're going through, they've been there. They lived it. They've done it. And they know all of the mistakes that they've made, and they can help you out along the way too. And so I think, you know, if we're just dismissing this because maybe those people don't look like us, they don't sound like us, they're not from the same era as us or whatever, we're missing out on a huge opportunity to tap into the knowledge and the wisdom that they are bringing to the table as well, right?
100%, yeah. Yeah, this VFW bar in town, like every afternoon, you know, there's folks just hanging out there, right? There's a real community that exists there. And to your point, they're not my age group. Like all their kids are, you know, out of college or whatever, right? But like they're people who I've got a lot in common with, often cases a lot more in common with than some of my neighbors, right? And it's about just kind of, just taking a step back and kind of checking them out and seeing what's going on there. I will touch on one more thing, which is depending on the organization you work for, like your company, there might be a bunch of opportunities there, right? Some larger organizations have like a veterans employee resource group, whatever they call it. If they don't, they're often really supportive of organizing it. If you're the kind of person who wants to roll up your sleeves and actually create that organization, you can often get money from your company to do events, right? To do barbecues or even do like outings, right? So don't cross it off the list either.
Yeah, and I think that is something too, that, you know, big or small, whatever size organization that you work for, if you know that there's other veterans who work there, that's something else that you guys have in common, is that shared connection of the job that you work at too. And I know just through doing this show, meeting veterans all the time, I've done, you know, hundreds of episodes with so different veterans from different branches, and every time I talk to them, we just have some sort of connection just right off the bat. And by the end of the episode, as we're talking, it's almost as if we've known each other for years. Like, it's almost as if we serve with each other because we do have that connection. So finding that common bond and that camaraderie, I think, is super important to have to keep that in your network and keep those people around you, because you know, you speak the common language. Even if you're coming from a different branch, you still, you know, you have an idea at least what they're talking about, and you have an idea what they've gone through in their lives. So you know, definitely don't dismiss whether it's the VFW or American Legion or organizations like that, or even, you know, within your own company, if there are you know, veteran resource groups or things like that. Like, don't dismiss those just because you know, I don't know, you want to isolate yourself and just be a hermit and stay in your house or whatever. Like, don't dismiss those things either, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. 100% agree.
Yeah. So how did you leverage your military background to help you succeed in tech? And where were you able to kind of leverage some of the skills and the experiences that you've had when it came through, it came to, you know, working in your career?
That's a good question. And in tech, it's actually kind of easy, right? Like, you know, all the services will put like IT types, like information technicians, through the basic courses like Network Plus. And, you know, if you're a little more senior, CISSP, those are common certifications that mean a lot in the civilian world. I do like to joke though, like, you know, the civilian world has no clue what to do with an intelligence officer. And so, you know, when I did start interviewing, people would be like, oh, that's really cool. I have no clue what that means. And some of them would even like joke, like, does that mean you're like James Bond? Like, I just don't even know what to make of this sort of intelligence experience. But But, you know, the truth is they knew what an EA was, right? So that's what I used as a stepping stone, kind of to get my foot in the door. But yeah, I mean, tech's a little bit easier than some of the other professions. I think it's becoming more common that the military is able to sort of map these occupation skills over to the military side. But I'd say most of the really strong skills I have, I didn't get to sort of explore in the civilian world for a few years because they're really around management and emotional intelligence and leading, you know, teams and motivating teams. So it's back to this kind of idea of like, sometimes you have to take one step back, take two steps forward.
Right.
And for me, I was in a IC role, individual contributor. It's kind of a Google term, for 4 years before I was able to step back into management. And that was actually one of the big reasons why I went to the startup world, was because I really missed that, the purpose and the sense of purpose and accomplishment I got by leading a team and watching them succeed and watching them grow. So, It is really hard though.
Yeah, and how did you like that transition, even from the corporate world to the startup world? What was that something that you saw in your roadmap from the get go, or was that something that like over time you kind of evolved into that role?
I evolved over time into realizing that's the move I had to make. First, the move was sort of out of the executive support role into more of like program management, frankly, because there's a lot of those roles and openings. It's a large kind of job group at Google. And I thought I really wanted to kind of focus on cybersecurity as a specialization. But having done that role for roughly 2 years, I realized cybersecurity is really interesting, but what I missed was this sort of management piece. And so it was actually through my network from the reserve side that I met the folks I work for now. And interestingly enough, like the leadership there is actually Australian Army. So very different like world, very different network. But they saw a former military officer, former junior officer, and they immediately knew what that meant, right? And obviously I never served with them. Actually I served with some Australian Navy, cool enough. But they knew enough to say that like, okay, a former Navy junior officer is going to have the skills we're looking for to lead this small company.
Right.
And so they took a chance on me and it worked out. But yeah, it's, we all sort of paint this picture in retrospect of like our career and, you know, it's easy to make it look easy. It's easy to make it look like it was all planned all along. But in reality, like we're all just kind of taking information, optimizing. It's like the OODA loop, right? You're optimizing based on like new information and you're making a decision. And you're constantly going through these OODA loops until you kind of find a steady state that you're pleased with. And so that was the case for me. Like if you'd asked me when I joined Google, I'd probably tell you I would have been there forever. but I quickly realized like there's kind of a ceiling here and I'm not going to get to a management role for a long time and I'm looking for a little more autonomy. And so I left.
I feel like a lot of people transitioning out of the military can certainly learn a lot from what Terrence has gone through, what his experiences were, and people like him. And what kind of what we were talking about was dealing with that transition out of the military and dealing with the isolation and finding some support from other people. Doesn't necessarily have to be veterans, but a lot of times the veterans are the ones that we feel most comfortable with. So finding the American Legions or the VFWs or other organizations that are out there, maybe even within your own company that you work for, is super important to that transition. Terrence, I want to kind of give you the opportunity here in the last couple minutes that we have to give us any kind of closing thoughts or words of wisdom, advice that you might have for people, and also to tell us a little bit more about what you do and where people can go to find a little bit more about the stuff that you do.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Scott. I would sort of challenge everyone to view transition as not like a TAPS program and like find a first job, but really as like a multi-year journey, right? The same way you expect to sort of move every few years in the military, you can expect that on the civilian side, probably. It's probably going to take some time to find that role, and it's going to be challenging, and there's going to be some disappointments. But you got to keep going because there's a ton of rewarding opportunities out there, and there's folks looking for people like like all of you out there listening, right, who are dedicated and who have raised your hand and decided to serve and are looking to continue to contribute. So, I'll leave it with that. A little bit about like what I'm doing now. I'm running Dream Factory Software, which is a API generation tool. It's a really interesting kind of new tech category. And the reason it interested me is because it bridges this world of sort of old sort of legacy tech with new sort of cloud-based tech, right? And so what we're able to do is we're connecting a lot of legacy systems, everything from mainframes to more sort of just kind of on-prem systems that you might see in like a government kind of organization, connecting them to anything they need to be connected to, specifically like the cloud. So really fun. It allows me to kind of blend these two worlds that I've worked in. And having a lot of fun with it.
Is it kind of like a Zapier kind of thing where you can connect different things and have them speak to each other and do different things like that? Is it somewhat similar to something like that, at least in concept?
Yeah, the concept's right there. It's think of like enterprise Zapier, but it actually sits within your organization's environment, right? So it's actually sitting within like your data center.
Sure.
In the case of like, you know, the Office of Naval Intelligence where I worked had their own data center within the middle of the building, right? So you'd kind of install it there and they could serve that data via an API that's, you know, fully secure and has all like the standard security controls out to wherever you need it. So it's really interesting, and I get to meet a lot of really interesting customers, people working on some fun and old stuff. So we've got a customer running a 1972 IBM mainframe that's using Dream Factory. So
wow.
I stopped getting surprised because it's just wild what we see.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different systems out there, and as time goes on, there's more and more different systems and different technology, different eras of technology. You talk about a computing system from the 70s, like that is just such an ancient technology that it's surprising that it even still turns on. Never mind, is able to communicate with anything else. But you're right. I mean, you got to be kind of not expecting anything crazy, anything else, any crazier than that. Cause I mean, that's about as crazy as I can think of. Right. It's just a lot of different stuff out there. So, Terrence, I do want to, just thank you so much for taking the time to, come on the show, sharing your experiences and helping out other veterans who might be out there. I really do appreciate you taking this time, to come on the show and join us.
Yeah, my pleasure. And folks, can find me on LinkedIn. I'm not really active on other social media. But, reach out and connect if you want to chat. My time is, I don't have a ton of free time, but I can point in the towards the resources and things that really helped me during my transition.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.